This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Aftershock Central Podcast with Martin and Ronnie.
The dynamic duo.
Dynamic duo. We have fired Jack. All he wants
Get
to do is
here.
Read. Yeah, he just wants to read Marvel. So we said, you know what? Go read your Marvel. Get out of here.
See you later.
Alligator. I haven't talked to you about this, though. We might have somebody else joining.
Oh.
Not tonight, but maybe like every so often.
All right.
I'll tell you about it later. But yeah, welcome back to whatever episode this is. We don't keep track of episodes anymore, so it doesn't matter, you know?
Welcome back to episode 1562.
That's right. It could be true. You don't know.
Depends on how many times you listen to the episodes.
I guess that's true. I mean, we'd have to do a lot of episodes because Aftershock just celebrated its second birthday. Okay. So if we had done 1,000 episodes, we'd be doing like 20 a week.
Yeah, like each book.
Yeah, we talk about each book 20 times
for,
a week.
For like 20 minutes, and then next day we talk about another book.
We do, I don't know if that's still a thing, but like a year or two ago, it used to be a thing in podcasting where there were like the minute podcasts. Where like people would launch podcasts about a movie and they'd do 1 minute of the movie and do like 120 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But the podcast wouldn't be a minute. They would just discuss a minute of the movie. And it'd be like, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess that can happen because, I mean, we've had podcasts where we talked about a trailer for an hour. So.
Ah, you must be referring to that Marvel podcast.
Well, yes, that, but I mean, we've all, you know, done Nerdy Legion where we talked about trailers, too.
Yeah, we've all done it.
Yeah.
I think one time I recorded with Daryl, and it was like a 3-hour podcast, and I don't even remember what it was, but it was something, it was like a 15-minute thing.
Well, that's Daryl.
Yeah, that is Daryl. He likes to talk.
Yeah.
Anyways, no one wants to hear about Daryl.
Nobody.
They want to hear about Aftershock. So, happy birthday, Aftershock. That's awesome. I remember when they first launched. Matter of fact, I think it was... They had just launched when I went to SC Comic Con 2 years ago. Because I was like, what in the world is this?
Right.
And I saw Joe there, and Lisa was there. I'm trying to think who else was there. I can't remember. I want to say Joe's brother was there, but Joe's brother doesn't work for Aftershock, so I could be wrong.
He could have just been trolling.
Yeah, he could be trolling. Because I don't think because his brother's doing Scout Comics now,
right?
But I don't think Scout was out then. You know what? Maybe Scout might have like I think Scout was about to launch, and they might have had a booth already. Maybe that's what it was. Anyways, good times. But yeah, 2 years later, here we are. Aftershock
and
putting out some books.
They're having a sale on their website.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Did you pick anything up?
I got the Dreaming Eagles hardcover.
Oh,
and you put, and then you put the coupon code of 2 years, and it gives you 25% or 20% discount.
Oh, man. So what's that, like $30 for the hardcover?
It's $30 for the hardcover, and you put the and it was like $22.
Damn, that's
so
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that hardcover's nice, man. It's oversized. Oof.
Yep.
Oof. You know, I wish every publisher would put out oversized collections.
Yeah, those are sweet.
They are nice. And I think Dreaming Eagles might be the only hardcover they've got.
It is.
That's crazy.
I was looking on there, and everything else was trade paperbacks, but...
Mm-mm-mm. If I didn't already own all this stuff, I would order something.
I know. Well, there's accessories, too, like pins and whatever, like shirts and all that. I almost ordered the shirt.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, maybe I'll get a shirt, because I have the pins. I've got all the pins.
Yeah.
Where's the shirts? I don't see shirts.
There were shirts on there, I thought.
I don't see it. Graded and signed comics, exclusive comics, direct market comics, direct market collections, retailer
maybe
variants,
not.
Die-cast pins.
Maybe not.
I wouldn't mind a shirt, though.
I know that they have shirts, because... I see Lisa and Joe and all them when they're doing their LCS tour.
Oh yeah,
you know, they have the shirts on, red and black ones.
Yeah, it seems to be going well. I see Lisa posting about it all the time.
Yeah,
I think she's in somewhere in Canada this week.
Yeah,
that's cool.
She just landed in Chicago, actually.
Oh,
so.
Did she? That's cool.
Yeah,
That's cool. Since you mentioned Chicago, we should say that we will be at C2E2 next year.
Yes. We will be there with bells on again to salsa dance with Joe.
That's right. It's on my brain tonight. So I gotta do that stupid press pass application.
Yep.
Ah, God, I hate those. You know what? I think they changed it. Because I'm pretty sure last year's was a lot longer than this one.
I thought last year's was a lot shorter, actually.
Really? I thought.
Yeah. The only thing like this year that it didn't ask for was like blood sample. It's like, come on, who really reads this? And then, like, you know, but, you know, whatever.
That's
like
hilarious.
Last year, we went through all that trouble and then ended up not even getting accepted or whatever.
Yep.
But we went anyways.
That's right. I drove. How long did I drive? I think it was like
12 hours.
Yeah, 12
hours?
Or 13 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
I might take the train, dude. I know you mentioned that. That's not a bad idea. I might do that.
Yeah. See, I drove 5.5 hours, so I mean, it. What? And I was by myself, so it was kind of therapeutic.
Yeah.
But you know, my 5.5 to your 13 by myself is kind of bad.
Well, and see, when I first moved down south, I used to take the Amtrak up to New York to visit my family. And I think it's about the same distance from here to New York as it is from here to Chicago. So, I don't know. I'll see what the ticket prices are. It might just make more sense to do that.
See, I think my ticket price is like $212, I think, from Hannibal to Chicago.
Really?
And I get to drink all the way.
Yeah, that's a plus. That's a plus.
And then I could just Uber around in Chicago or whatever, or until to the hotel and then meet up with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then festivities.
Festivities indeed. Man, last year was
I think
fun.
We're gonna set up where we have supper with Joe one night.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I know we talked about it.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think that'll be fun.
Yep.
Let's do some announcements.
Okay.
Because since last time we talked, I believe we had mentioned that I had seen some images of the new Rough Riders book.
Yep.
And it's now been officially announced. So Rough Riders, Ride or Die, is coming in February.
Not by DMX.
Not by DMX. Did you know, dude, DMX lives here now, where I live. He's like
really?
20 minutes away, yeah. Matter of fact, a couple years ago, when I still lived in Spartanburg, he showed up at the bar that we used to go to all the time. And he'd just like hang out and like sign people's stuff, get a couple drinks, and just leave.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he had left Yonkers and he moved to Greer. And Greer wasn't far from Spartanburg, so he'd just like go bar hopping, I guess. I have no idea. But yes, I've seen DMX a couple times. But it was weird though, because when I lived in New York, he lived like 20 minutes from me in New York.
Wow.
Yeah, he's following me. I wasn't very far from the Yonkers border, so yeah, it's kind of weird. Anyways.
So, if you get in your truck in the morning and you hear barking, watch out, because X is going to get you.
Oh, man, I've played that CD so many times.
I know.
Oh, my God, it was amazing. But, yeah, so we've got a new Rough Riders, Ride or Die, same creative team, so that's awesome. Adam Glass writing, of course, Patrick Olive on art, Gabe Eltab coloring, Sal Cipriano doing the letters. So it's cool that they're keeping all the same people, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And after this last one, man, I'm stoked for this new one. Stoked!
Yep, so ready.
Can't wait. The other one that's coming out that I think was announced like the day after we recorded is Cold War. And that's Chris Sabella and Hayden Sherman writing an art. And there's preview pages. I think... The Alters that we are going to be discussing this week had a preview of Cold War.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you can go to whatever website you'd like to go to, and I'm sure they'll have a preview of it. But it looks interesting. It's like people get put in, like, this cryogenic chambers because they think they're going to... They think they're going in there to wake up in the future when their illness is cured. Kind of like that Walt Disney urban legend thing, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Except when they wake up in the future, they are enlisted as soldiers. I don't know. It sounds weird.
Because it's not a good future to wake up in at all.
Yeah, it's a pretty crappy future.
Yep.
So it sounds pretty interesting. I looked at the previews. It looks pretty dark and I don't know, like really, really sci-fi. So I'm looking forward to that.
The cover, one of the covers, looks like T2 Arnold.
Oh,
style.
Yeah, when he's coming out of the time travel thing, the little bubble.
Yeah,
I like that. When I first saw the previews, I thought it was, oh, God, what's his name? Wando?
Yeah.
I think Wando does a variant for Cold War number one. It looks just like his art. But, yeah, see, it doesn't list it here. Oh, here it is. Yeah, it is Wando. Wando cover B, which I think I might get that cover instead. Then,
it's Wando, so how could you not?
I love some Wando, man. Yeah. But, yeah, this looks cool, man. So that's coming out. I can't remember what the date was. I know Rough Riders is the last week of the month, so I would assume they would put this other new book maybe right before it. Let me see. I bet I can pull
February?
It out.
February?
Oh, here we go. It comes out Valentine's Day. That's perfect. February 14th.
Yep.
So, awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Matter of fact, we should maybe talk to Chris and Hayden and get him on the show and talk about it.
That's cool. Yep, I'm all for that.
I think that'd be interesting. And I don't know if I'm familiar with Hayden's stuff, but I've read some of Chris Sabella's stuff before, and I really enjoyed it. So we'll see. We'll see how this one goes.
Yep.
Of course, if we want to talk announcements, we have to talk about what I think is the biggest one. But you had a question about this, so we should discuss it. And that's the book that was announced today, which is Relay.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
I guess it's old breaking news.
Yeah.
Though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought it was cool because I actually broke it on the Twitter account because I hadn't seen anybody posting about it.
Yep.
So.
You are the man.
It's what... Quick Draw McGraw.
Maybe you're hooked up to the Relay.
Maybe.
Mm. So this is written by Zach Thompson with art by Andy Clark. And the story is by Zach Thompson and the greatest comic book writer of the modern era, Donny Cates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, you did. Hey, have you read Ghost Fleet yet?
Hey.
But if not, it's great.
Yeah, matter of fact, I started rereading it tonight. God, it's still so good.
I think I'm going to get that oversized hardcover of it.
I'm thinking about it, man. My wife and I talked about this, and like she doesn't want anything for Christmas. I don't really want anything either. But then that came out, and I was like, oh, man, maybe I should just get that.
Yeah.
Just to have something under the tree.
Yep.
But
the dog's got it for you.
I can't believe it, man. An absolute Ghost Fleet. God.
Yeah.
So anyway, so your question was, because Donnie is on the cover, credited.
Right.
But you noticed something.
I did notice something.
Tell me what you noticed.
I noticed that Zach was the one that did all the interviews, and it was his announcement, because shortly after I broke it on our Aftershock Twitter feed, he put out a tweet that said, thrilled to announce I've been working on Relay with Donny Cates and Aftershock Comics and Andy Clark on the art. And it's a crazy sci-fi love letter to Philip K. Dick that explores how legends are passed down.
God.
So, and then I went to a couple of websites that broke it also, and it was all Zach talking about it, about his concept and Andy's art, and then him working with collaboration with Donnie. So that's what I was curious about. Is it a trio-created book, or is Donnie just, like, giving it out ideas and suggestions, and then that's their way of crediting him for it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Because when it was announced, the way that I had read the announcement was that they were co-writing it. But now looking at the solicit for it, and, yeah, I mean, I saw a couple interviews as well. It looks like it's all Zach writing it. And Don is just involved somehow. My assumption is maybe like plotting, maybe they were like hanging out at a bar and Zach's like, oh, Philip K. Dick's awesome. And Donnie's like, yeah, I love Philip K. Dick. And they started talking about Philip for like, you know, 3 hours, and all of a sudden they had this idea and bam, that's what happened.
Right.
And I don't know if, Zach Thompson's done any like book, cause the only one that I know of is the Dregs from Black Mask.
Right. Yeah. I think so.
So my assumption is that, you know, Donnie Donnie's kind of a big deal now, I guess, right? Because he's got that Marvel exclusive, and he's got a few independent books, right? So he's doing Baby Teeth. He's got Redneck. Mm-hmm. What's the
God
one
Country.
That God Country? What's the one that just came out? Oh man, he's got another one that just came out. And then the
Marvel stuff.
Yeah, then the Marvel stuff, Doctor Strange and Thanos.
Yeah,
and a secret project apparently.
Well, it's kind of not so secret. I mean, it hasn't been officially announced, but like everybody else was, besides two of the creators were like tweeting about it. So, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. So, anyways, maybe that's what the deal is.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like if we took a long train to C2E2 and we came up with, say, a comic book. And then, like, you got an artist and wrote it, then you're like, hey, I don't really want to be an ass. Mm. And then credited me about it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Kind of like the whole, you didn't want to be like Bob Kane to Bill Finger, right?
That's right. So what you're saying is I can't do Stripper Hunters on my own.
That's correct.
Okay, fair enough.
Just like I can't do Adventures of Drunk Dad without giving you some credit.
Oh, man. I should really work on that.
See, my first half of the book's done.
I'll work on it one day, I promise. When I'm not busy reading comic books and podcasting.
Yeah, well, that'll be about 2025.
Yeah, 2025. Mm, maybe I should just pre-record the next, like, 6 months worth of podcasts. Anyways, so, yeah, it's exciting, man. I'm looking forward to that one. You know, Nick and I were recording all our Christmas week episodes this past week, and we did one for Aftershock about what genres we kind of like to see Aftershock hit on.
Right.
And, of course, my number one answer was more sci-fi. And I won't tell you what we actually discussed because, of course, that episode's not out yet. But, yeah, I think Aftershock's doing a really good job with doing hard-hitting sci-fi.
Yeah,
and it's nice for me as a big sci-fi nerd.
There's one that I would like to see that hasn't really came out yet,
mm-hmm.
but we can get into that some other time.
Yeah. Cool, so those are the announcements, right? Is that it?
Yep, that's it.
Great. So let's talk about some books. Since we didn't release an episode last week, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about this week's book first, which is Alters number 8. And then if you want to hang out, we'll be talking about Fujitsu number 3 and Dark Arc number 3. And are we making an announcement at the end or no? Are we waiting on the announcement? Let's wait on the announcement.
I don't care.
Well, should it be a surprise?
Yeah, let it be a surprise.
Okay. We're gonna
no announcement for you.
No announcement. All right, so let's talk about Alters. It's Paul Jenkins, Lila Lees. We still need to get her on here. I know we talked to her a little while back.
Yeah.
Leonardo Pacioretty on colors, Ryan Hill on letters. And man, I love Alters, dude. There. We're done.
Yeah.
We're done talking about Alters.
Yeah. It's so fluffy and like on the surface, but like hard hitting underneath.
Yeah, totally.
And it's so fun and complex all at the same time.
Yep. So I guess I'll do a quick recap of this. And now I can't remember her name. What's the lady's name?
Charisse,
there you go. So Charisse is confronted by the anarchists who used to be Matter Man's people. They want to use her for her abilities. And, of course, in order to get her to cooperate, they had kidnapped her kids. Anyways, they start fighting it out. She's got a little compact, so she uses that to teleport out of the place, except as that's about to happen, they grab one of her kids. She comes upon Chalice, who helps her out, convinces her to go see Octavius and the whole crew. Octavius decides to hire Charisse and start training her. And there's some stuff with Philip Kyle,
yep.
The Andromorph, and he kind of comes in to help Chalice at the end as she's staking out the anarchists. So that's the recap. Did I miss anything? I don't think so. Let's dive in. So I had a few questions. But first, before my questions, I have a comment to make.
Okay.
So Alters has now jumped to the top of my list of Aftershock comics. Can you take a guess as to why that might be?
Well, Donny Cates isn't writing it, so correct. That's not it.
Yep.
Because this feels like X-Men?
Man, so close, but yet so far. It's a much more narcissistic reason.
Oh.
Because in Alters number 8, what's Charisse's son's name?
Her youngest one?
Her youngest his son.
Name, his name is Martin.
His name is Martin. You're damn right.
Worst name ever.
So I believe, now I've been in, in The Revisionist.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in Alters.
Yeah.
How many are you in?
Well,
just Black Eyed Kids.
Just Black Eyed Kids, but I mean, it's actually me, not like my name.
Listen, I don't care about that.
Well, if you wanted to get technical and egotistical about it.
I just want to be in the comic. I don't care if it's actually me. It could be a all woman right. named Martin. I don't care. So, Ronnie, okay. 2-1. It's Joe Pruitt,
2-1.
I'm still not in Black Eyed Kids. We're going to fight. But, and I was in, 3-1.
You were in Jackpot, too, right?
In Jimmy's Bastards.
Oh, Jimmy's Bastards, yeah.
Yep.
You were one of the bastards.
I was one of the bastards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that one's kind of more realistic.
Yep. Alters. Number one book.
Until next week.
Well, I don't know. We'll see. There is a new book coming out next week.
That is true.
But, and they better have a Martin in it. That's all I'm saying. So, yeah. So, Alter number 8. So, we've got that little altercation. Mm-hmm. And there's some really interesting discussions. I think ever since Charisse was introduced into the book, there's been a lot of really interesting social commentary, and we get a little bit more of that here and in a couple of different places. And I think my favorite interaction of that was with Octavius, mostly because it didn't feel. I don't know how I want to put it. But, you know, like, Octavius is kind of clueless, right? Because he's so smart and powerful that, like, he's completely oblivious to reality, I think. That's the impression
like,
I get.
He's, like, super smart, but super dumb in the common sense department, right?
Yeah. He's knowledge smart, but he doesn't have, like, street cred.
Social skills.
Definitely no social skills.
Yeah.
Definitely not
social street cred, I guess.
Yeah. But that whole thing plays out in the whole issue, right? Because as soon as Charisse escapes and she's in that limbo dimension or whatever, and Chalice finds her there, that's kind of when we start having the discussion.
Well, even before that, like when the head anarchist guy's talking to her, he's like talking down to her.
Oh,
Because she doesn't have proper English, I guess.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's more of the broken, like, I don't know how to describe it, but...
No,
like
I got
you. Like slang terms instead of actual punctuation.
Yep.
When they talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is bravo, because I think, like, Paul Jenkins nailed her character to, like, a T, almost.
Well, and I think that's true of all these characters, and that's why... that's one reason I really enjoy reading this, is sometimes you've got writers who, they might be amazing writers, but it sometimes feels like the voice is a little forced. I'm trying to think, like, recent example. I think with, like, Mark Waid, that's an issue that I've had in a couple things that he's done.
Yep, yeah.
Because he tries to write young characters, or maybe they just put him on books with young characters. Mm-hmm. But... I mean, Mark Waid hasn't been young in, like, you know, 30 years, 40 years. So while you can tell that they're young characters, like, the lingo and things like that feels a little bit off. Off by, like, maybe, like, 10 years at least.
Right, yeah.
Whereas in this book, and by the way, if you love Mark Waid, that's great. I love Mark Waid as well. So this is not a jab on Mark Waid. But I never get that from Paul Jenkins. Because with this book, they all feel very genuine, right? So Chalice is a transgender person, but I never feel that. Like every time I'm reading the book, he writes her like she's a woman, and that's how I read it, and I don't think about anything else.
Right. Well, not even like the adults, but like young Martin.
Who?
Like when they're
who?
Like when they're in the cafe.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Mama, he can't even do whatever."
Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
You know what I mean? And that would be something that a 5-year-old kid would say.
Sure.
Right? Because they're innocent and they don't know better.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. Yeah, and actually that plays out really well once they go meet up with Octavius and everybody. And he meets, I don't think they ever named the guy. John, was it? The guy that can make the purple crystals?
Yeah. Like Snow?
Yeah.
Basically.
Martin has a bit of dialogue in that whole sequence.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it feels like a little kid, you're right.
Yeah.
And that's nice to see. And the crazy thing is, there's such a big cast of characters that to be able to give them all their voice and have the voice feel genuine is really great.
An individual.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's see what else we got on here. Yeah, so I want to talk about the Phil thing. Phil and Chalice.
Okay. Yes?
I'm trying to gather my thoughts on this. Because I found it interesting, and it was really touching, because there's some really deep stuff that they're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, really deep. Kind of dark, really. Because he's paralyzed now, from the neck down. And so she's going to visit him all the time, and, you know, this scene, she's feeding him spaghetti or whatever it is.
Right.
And he kind of tells her that he wants her to stop going to see her. And she doesn't quite understand why. And I think maybe he feels like she... How do I want to say this? It's almost like maybe she feels responsible in a way for the whole thing. And she's doing it totally out of pity.
She totally feels guilty for it,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, whether she feels that or not is one thing. But he obviously feels that, right? And so he doesn't want her there. Because he doesn't want the pity party, right? Which I totally understand.
Yeah.
I totally understand.
Which is like a struggle, because he wants her there because, you know, she comes and visits.
Of course.
But then he doesn't because he can feel or see her guilt when she comes. So then even if he's having like a good day emotionally, then as soon as she walks in, then he can feel that and it brings them both down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that's real too, you know, because I've talked to people in similar conditions, and oftentimes they do feel that way because they feel like everybody feels sorry for them, that they're in a wheelchair or this or that or whatever. And a lot of people with disabilities don't feel like they're disabled.
Right.
Right. And so they don't want a pity party from somebody just because whatever, they can't see or they're missing an arm or they're in a wheelchair, whatever the hell it is. And I thought it was really nice to see that in a comic, because I don't think I've ever seen that in a comic before.
Yeah, I don't. Nothing sticks out, that's for sure.
Yeah. And of course, so he's got two choices, and that's kind of where both of their dilemmas lie, because he's got this awesome ability where he can turn into the Andromorph. But if he does that, he'll have... his full capabilities, right? He'll be able to walk and use his arms and do whatever the hell he wants. But he'll only be able to hold that form, for like 3 months. And then after that, he'll be exhausted and he'll die.
Well, in her, like, diary entry, it says a few weeks, but when they're at bedside talking about it, they say a couple months. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, because... So he says 3 months, and she's like, I don't think you can hold it that long. And that's when the diary thing comes up.
Right.
And then the other choice is for him to never use his ability and live out the rest of his life, but then he'll be
quadriplegic. Yeah.
And that's a tough thing to handle. And I've seen this kind of thing done before in other aspects, but never like with a real life situation like this. And I was trying to think of some like recent comics that have done it. And the only one that like came immediately to my head was Gotham in that first arc of Batman Rebirth.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't quite the same because like they didn't have disabilities; they just
right.
had these enhancements. Right. But it's the same thing, right? Like,
if, or like Spawn.
Or like Spawn, exactly. He had the ticker. And once they use their abilities, that's it.
Yeah.
Right? And they die. And that's kind of what happens to those characters. So, but at the same time, like, so I thought to myself, well, which one would I choose? And I think I would choose just like Phil chose.
Yeah. Well, because that brings up the underlining question that she has herself is like, if he chooses to shift, will that count as like suicide, self-suicide, right?
Right. Right. Which I get that. But at the same time, I feel like I would want to live my life the best that I could, and do the most good that I could, even if that meant that it would shorten my life.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
Because like, it's not like he just wants to turn into this thing and go hang out in the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. Like right. he wants to be a hero.
Yep.
And I think that's very noble. And I feel like that's something that I would want to do. I wouldn't want to be stuck in a wheelchair the rest of my life, right? Like, sure, it means a long life, but like, I don't care about that. Right. I don't want to live. Yeah. I don't want a long life. I want a good, happy life.
Meaningful.
So, yeah, right. Meaningful. Exactly. And so I could totally relate to that. But I don't think Chavez quite understands that whole situation.
Right. Which is cool that they wrote her like that, because I don't think anybody would unless they were put in that situation.
But see, at the same time, like, I was thinking about her brother, because her brother is a quadriplegic. He's got cerebral palsy, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And, like, surely, like, this has come up when she would take care of him, right?
Yeah.
Because he communicates with her telepathically.
Right.
So I'm surprised something like that wouldn't have come up. So I feel like maybe Chalice should have understood better.
But see, well, yes, but... like, from what we know from her brother, is like, he was born that way, though.
Sure, sure.
So, it's more adjusted for him?
Yeah.
I don't know if adjusted is the right word or not, but, like, that's the only thing he's ever known.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As to where, with Philip, you know, he had freedom of everything before, and then it all ended.
Yeah, right, right, right.
So, you know, there's that extra weight, and it's like, you're not sure what... I mean, you could say that now, but, like, what happens, like, if you actually get put in that spot, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but you feel the weight from both sides just by reading. I mean, it jumps out in you from the pages.
Sure. So. Yeah, absolutely. I think that whole thing was one of my favorite interactions in this whole issue.
Yep.
But, I mean, there's a ton to like in here. Do you want to talk about the diner scene, or do we just move on?
Yeah, we can just move on. It's fine, because, I mean, she just talks to Charisse, and then, you know, trying to gain trust, and Chalice actually opens up for the first time to, like, go out on a limb like she's asking Charisse to do and trust. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and she tells her a lot about herself, right? She tells her the whole transgender thing, and she talks about her family and all that. And so that gets Charisse to go and agree to talk to Octavian. And of course, you know, we see how awkward he is, because he is awkward AF.
Yeah.
through their interactions, like, you know, Martin finds this guy, John, that we talked about, who does his little Iceman trick, right?
Yep.
Except it's crystals. And, you know, Charisse and Octavian go back and forth until finally he tells her, hey, we want you to train here. We'll pay you. You have full salary with benefits and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you're going to pay me for doing something I was doing anyway? And, of course, she's super excited and agrees to join Octavian in their cause.
Right.
So where's all this money coming from?
Well, it's government funded, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, I guess so.
So, I mean, well, that's what that was one of the questions that, the main question out of this whole thing that I had, and what really wasn't an issue type question, it was like, when he said it, like, is she the exception? Like, everybody else is just doing it. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
But, like, is she actually the only one that's going to get paid for it and, you know, have benefits and stuff?
See, I hope that's not the case, though, because that's really going to backfire if that's the case.
Well, Chalice doesn't get paid for it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, but, I mean, she wasn't, I don't know. I mean, that was, like, one of the things that, because I think that's what added the extra element to the awkwardness also,
mm-hmm.
because that was her meeting with Chalice's meeting with them before he actually met Charisse, was like going through the plan. Is this okay?
Right.
Are you okay with doing it? And then, you know, you got to make it feel like it's your idea and not a handout, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what made me question whether, you know, everybody else actually got paid for it, or if they were just there to learn and, you know, use their abilities and be good citizens and help save the world type stuff.
Yeah, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about that before. I mean, my assumption would be that maybe Octavian and like a couple of the people that are there with them full time get paid their own salary. But everybody else that's in training is just there for training.
Right.
But again, if that's the case, because that's what they're bringing Charisse in to do, that's still going to backfire.
Yep, right.
So, anyway, so they need to find Patient 9, which, by the way, fantastic name for a villain.
Yep.
And it's N-E-I-N, like, which means no in German.
Yep.
So Patient 9 and the Anarchist. And, of course, in order to do that, they need some help, and against Octavian's better judgment, Chalice goes to talk to the Matter Man, who loves drinking tea with his pinky up.
Oh, yeah. Because he's all proper.
He is all proper.
He's got his cigar out and his smoke jacket on right next to the fireplace.
Dude, I mean, look at this cell.
Yeah.
I'd be super happy, too, if I was in jail and my cell looked like this.
Yeah.
Holy cow. It's almost
like we're looking at Paul in jail, right? Are those two little big books over there, are they trade hard paperbacks of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
It could be. It could be Usagi Yojimbo.
Yep, that too.
Never know. Anyways, so there's a whole interaction with him. He's such a douche, but I love him. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, because they're opposites
right.
of each other.
Right, exactly.
You know, so like where she's caring and compassionate, he's totally the opposite of it, and just blunt, and
yeah. So anyway, she gets some information from him, and then she goes to the docks to find Patient 9 and the other people. And as she's doing her surveillance, who shows up but the Andromorph, Philip Kyle? So obviously he's decided to he's made his decision. He's gonna, you know, take his form and do what he wants to do, which is be a hero.
Mm-hmm.
So good way to end it.
Oh yeah. Definitely way, because now we got more conflict for issue 9.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, I was reading this book, and then I got to that last panel when he shows up, and I was like, oh no, somebody found her out. And I was like, oh wait, it's Philip.
Yep.
I was like, that's Philip. It was weird. It was like an emotional roller coaster in one panel. So I want to talk about the art real brief. This book is freaking awesome. I love the art. And they changed colorists, if I'm not mistaken, from the first arc to this one. Mm-hmm. And it really, I don't know what it is, but it just feels maybe more polished, I guess. I don't know. It looks different.
Yeah, I was going to talk about it, too, because, and the one thing I was going to bring up was Chalice herself.
Yes.
Herself, whatever.
Yes.
Because, like, you can tell, like, early in the day, or, you know, when you look fresh, say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she looks like a pretty girl.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
But then as the day goes on, it seems like it wears, like if you go to the cafe scene, it's almost like it's back to, like, all the makeup and whatever's wore off type of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's almost like, I read it as, like, her emotional state as well, right? Because, you know, going through the day, you wake up, I'm ready to tackle the day, and as the day goes on, it's like, to hell with this, I'm ready to for this day to be over type thing. Huh. And the emotional drain that she had for the day.
See, I didn't see that. What I do see is color differences between like real life stuff and superhero stuff.
Well, yeah.
Because all the characters are like a lot shinier.
Yeah.
Like the image is more rendered in the scenes towards the end with Octavian and all that than in the beginning of the book where there's not really superheroics going on, and that's cool too. I don't know if I'm sure it's a a choice that the colorist is making. So I really dug
that. Yeah, it totally works. That's for sure.
Yep. Let's go ahead and rate this up unless you have anything else to say.
Nope, I'm good.
All right. I'm going to give it a 4.5. No, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give it a 4.43789 out of 5.
All right. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5 because the story's there. Just like I said, it's fun and deep all mm-hmm. at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The art is pretty spot on. And if you haven't read the series, or if you read this issue and don't feel nothing from it, then you have no feelings.
That's right. Grow a heart, fool.
That's right, Grinch.
Yes, Salters. Fantastic. This is good superhero comics, man. I tell you. Love it.
Yep, definitely.
All right, let's talk about last week's books then. I guess we're going to be kicking off with Fujitsu number 3. And Jay Nitz writing, Wes Sinclair on art, Maria Santaleola on colors, and Ryan Hill on letters. And just like issue 1, just like issue 2, I'm not going to do a recap, Ronnie, because this is a very tough book to recap, Ronnie.
Yeah, it is.
Especially this issue. And based on the way that it ends, I'm assuming also next issue?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Okay. Good. So I wasn't the only one that caught that. So this book takes us into the past. We should recap. At the end of issue 2, Fu met Time Fu, his time-traveling self.
Yes.
Not a doppelganger. It's his actual self.
Yep.
So in this issue, instead of seeing what happens with... the Voltron robot that Fujitsu has, we get a flashback issue of 1961. And Fu in 61 was called the Shaolin Lad. And he is partnered up with Golden Arm.
Yeah.
Who's a football player with a gold arm.
Yeah. Man, why would it not be?
I mean, I'm just saying. But, So what I found really interesting about this issue, I don't know how we're going to talk about this book. I never know how we're talking about this book. But one thing that I really like about this issue is that it not only is it giving you some more story on Fu and what's happened to him over the last 100 years, because he was born in, 1890 something, I think is what he said.
Right.
But this particular issue is like a commentary on comic books, and in particular the different ages of comic books. So this particular story would be taking place in the Silver Age, which was much more lighthearted than Golden Age stuff. There was a lot of refinement in comics, but there was also way too much silliness. This is when, writers were experimenting with drugs. So, you start getting, weird monsters popping into books. A bunch of aliens start popping into books. You start getting a shift in books as well, because this is when Marvel starts popping up. I think that was, 63 or 64? So a lot of weird stuff starts happening. And that's why, Fu and Golden Arm are fighting these toad people.
Right.
Because that's pretty much what happened throughout the 60s, is everybody was fighting toad people.
Right.
And the art showcases that as well, right? It's more of a throwback style.
Like journalism style?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And it's been rendered to look like newsprint, which I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
The art is, of course, a lot looser in these particular pages. But very dynamic, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Wild and crazy.
Wild and crazy. I mean, and everything was wild and crazy in comics in the 60s, so.
Yeah.
The main villain they're fighting is, of course, the French Revolution, because why wouldn't it be?
Why not?
Why not? And it's a French guy who's also a Catholic cardinal, apparently. and he's got a flying cathedral that is his fortress.
That's right.
And he has a bunch of Toad people. Do you ever play Battletoads? Do you remember that game from the 90s?
Yes.
Oh, God, that was so good.
See, I thought about them, and I also thought about, what's his name? Like, Paul would kill me. Is it Genghis Toad?
Genghis Toad?
From the Ninja Turtles, you know? He had, like, the Hawaiian shirt on.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, but that's what I thought of.
Let's find out. Yep. Genghis Grimtoad.
There you go. Yep. See.
Oh, wow. Oh, wait. No, that's a different character. Genghis Frog is the one from the Turtles.
Okay.
Oh, I remember Genghis Frog. Yeah, this guy was terrible.
Yeah.
He was awful. Yeah. Oh, wow. But, yeah, totally. Totally. So we get, like, this whole history of Foo from, like, 1930 until the 60s. And then after that, I'm not quite sure where the book's happening.
Right.
Because I think... So he explains that there's pretty much not going to be a Golden Age story with Fu, because in 1930, he went to space, apparently. Mm-hmm. And just kind of, like, hung out in different planets for 17 years. And then, and then came back to Earth. And crash landed in Roswell, and that's why we have the Roswell alien crash in 47. And that's when his crime fighting started. So he became a hero. He teamed up with Golden Arm and fought a bunch of bad guys. And that's the first time that he met Wadlow. Now, I was a little confused about that. Mm-hmm. Because Wadlow says that he's the Emperor of Earth. But didn't that happen in the now?
Yeah, I thought it happened in the now, because that's when he got the sword, right?
Yeah.
And he took over all the nations, or made the nations agree to his terms,
whatever? Yeah, exactly. The atomic katana, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
But that's happening in the past. So, I mean, can Wadlow time travel too? Because there's obviously some, like, weird, funky time travel. Oh, you know what? I know what it is now. No, that's not it either.
Yeah, but you're just thinking too much about it.
Yeah, no, I am, and that's why time travel is a little weird sometimes. I was trying to think, because I was like, well, maybe it's when he escaped the end of time, but that's not when he escaped, because he ended up at the end of time because of this fight with Golden Arm and Fu.
Right. Yeah.
But there's definitely some, like, weird time, either time dilation or time travel thing.
Yeah, there's definitely.
Because Fu starts talking about all the senses, and he's like, you know, I'm not talking about, like, psychic bullcrap. And he starts going through the senses, you know, like sensing temperature, or like sensing where your arms are in comparison to your body, or whatever else. Sensing danger. And then there's something about time on there. And, like, everything just kind of gets thrown at you so quickly. It confused me a little bit. But somehow it's got to be tied to that, because when Wadlow meets up with Golden Arm and Fu, he's like, there's only one of you. Mm-hmm. And there's a little humor, because Golden Arm's like, wait, like, there's two of us here. So I guess maybe he thought that, like, hey, can you not see me? Like, are you only focused on Fu? But apparently Wadlow was expecting two Fus to be there at this time, because he had talked to P.T. Barnum's ghost, because of course he would. And P.T. Barnum apparently had talked to his psychics, and they had told him that there would be two Foos at this period of time.
Two Foos for the price of one.
Two Foos for the price of one. And so that's why he was expecting two. And he and Fu start fighting, and then the other Foo comes up, the Time Foo, and there's another fight. And somehow or other, Wadlow ends up at the end of time. The Time Foo does some time mumbo jumbo, and next panel, Wadlow is just in complete darkness.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah. I guess we're getting that story next issue. Is that's what's happening?
Well, it says next issue is how Wadlow escaped his prison at the end of time.
Okay, good. Okay.
And who is Time Foo? And why did the Golden Arm retire from superheroics when Johnny Unitas was traded to the Chargers? Maybe you'll find out next issue of Golden Arm and Shylon Ladd.
Yep, exactly what you said. So look, here's the thing. Like, I don't know what the hell is going on in this book. But you know what? Like, it's super fun to read. That's all I know.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like one of those that, like, you're going into like high conversation trying to like decipher everything. And I was like, dude, I just read it and laugh and like, oh my God, this art's cool when it goes back to the 60s. And then that was it.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So then we cut from the end of time back to the present, and Wadlow's with his little flunkies, and they're like, oh, can you tell us how you got out of the end of time? And that's when Fujitsu Voltron Optimus Prime robot shows up.
Yeah, and Fujitsu is here.
Dude, this would be an awesome cartoon, like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Would it not?
Yeah,
it'd be like, awesome. Or like late night Cartoon Network style?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll go ahead and rate it up. Now, you know what? You go first, because I have no idea.
I'm going with a 4.
Yeah?
Yeah, because, like, this, like you said, all elements, it's a super fun factor.
Yeah.
Right? And then plus the art style, like, it changed a couple times, like, in issue 1, 2, and 3 also, or 1 and 2, I mean, but, like, in this one, because when Watlow's in darkness there, it went back to pointillism style, newspaper style.
Yep.
It's just a super fun book, and I can't wait to actually read it all together in trade.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's going to make any more sense than what it does now, but, like, yeah, this is definitely, like, a Saturday night cartoon style.
Agreed. I'm just going to go there with you, dude. I'll go with a 4 as well. You know, to quote our buddy Mike from the Geek Brunch podcast, you should just read stuff that really brings you joy. And, you know, I don't know what the hell's going on here, but it's just so much fun to read that I kind of don't care to know what's going on.
Right.
And I think those kind of books are very few and far between nowadays.
Agreed.
There are what some people would call... I'm going to use my one profanity for the episode. The shitter reads. But this is not that. This is more of a palate cleanser, I guess you would say.
Yeah, yeah.
So after you're done reading all your crappy books that you hate, go and read Fujitsu, and then you'll be happy again, and you can continue reading comics.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so 4 out of 5 for me as well. Last book, then, is Dark Arc number 3, and... I'm not going to recap this one either, but pretty much what happens is Shrey is looking to find out who killed the Naga in the last issue, and he suspects Nex, who's the head of Empire, and nobody wants to say who did it, but then we find out who did it, and I was very disappointed, Ronnie. But not because the book was not good. That's not why I was disappointed. I was disappointed in myself and in yourself. Because I believe that we were both hoping that the unicorns had killed the Naga Witch, but they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't.
So we were trying to bring the unicorns down? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, it would have been the last one to expect, right?
Right, yeah.
But, of course, it wasn't. It was the one that we actually did expect.
Yeah.
Which was
a twist all in itself, right?
Well, there's several twists, right? Because... none of the monsters want to tell Shrey who killed the Naga, because they're all afraid that if they talk, that they're going to be the next one killed, which is totally understandable. The unicorns talk about this whole thing, and one unicorn wants to tell Shrey what's going on. The other one doesn't, because, of course, the other one's also afraid.
Right.
But the unicorn's kind of like, you know what? Like, we don't belong with these monsters. If we tell Shrey what's going on, he'll kind of give us a break.
Which seals their fate. Well, I guess we don't know that yet, but, I mean, unicorns don't exist, so...
Yeah, you assume.
Yeah.
Neither do vampires and Naga witches.
You don't know that. Haven't you seen Twilight? Come on.
Yeah, but they sparkle, dude. These vampires don't sparkle.
Well, this is, like, the beginning of... time.
Oh, so they evolved to sparkle.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. Now you're making sense, Ronnie.
See, vampires didn't wear skinny jeans back then either, but they do now.
Ah, good point. Good point. Vampires have turned into hipsters. So,
create a roll call.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even do that. My bad. Good call, Ronnie. Written by Cullen Bunn. Art by Wando, who we already mentioned once. Letters by Ryan Hill. And that's it.
Ryan Hill's all on these books this week.
Ryan Hill's everywhere.
Yeah.
But, yes. So what I found really interesting, though, the most interesting part of this to me was the whole thing with the unicorn, though.
Yeah.
Because the whole time, like, you and I have been talking about this since the first issue. Why are the unicorns in the Dark Ark? Wouldn't the unicorns be in Noah's Ark?
Right. Well, yeah, why are they dark enough to be on here?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm not a unicorn expert, you know.
Right.
I'm not a brony, okay?
Right.
I don't watch
right.
My Little Pony, so I don't know.
We'll leave that to Aaron Bell.
But my assumption is that unicorns are just kind of like rainbow, you know, the rainbow unicorn thing, right? They're just like happy creatures.
That and it can't be because they're oddities, because, I mean, the freaking platypuses made it on the Ark.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
but the thing is, like, there's got to be a reason why they're there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's got to be a dark, secret reason why they're there.
Yeah. But we don't know. And the thing is, they still play very coy. Because once the one decides to talk to Shrey, they work out a deal, right? And so the deal is, you know, the unicorns don't think they should be on this Ark with these monsters. And in order for Shrey to get the information that the unicorn has, the unicorns want to live up at the top of the Ark, where the humans are, away from the monsters.
Yep, because they don't think they're monsters.
So my thing is, well, like, maybe that makes them the worst of monsters, because they think that they're better than everybody else.
Yeah,
correct. But we haven't seen anything that would give you any clues about that, right? Because, like, they're, maybe they just play that way, but they've been among the most timid of all the monsters.
Right.
Right?
And on surface, they should live above with the humans, because they are better than the rest of them.
Well.
By perception, I'm saying.
Sure. But you know what they say about assuming, Ronnie.
I know.
So I hope that before the series is over, we learn why the unicorns are here.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we're going to get that next issue, right? Because so at the end of the last issue, you saw the other vampires. Well, you saw they were vampires. I didn't know what the hell they were. It was confirmed in this issue that there were vampires. Coming out from under the sea, going up and into the Ark, and they start attacking people and attacking monsters. Fortunately, we get information about the murder before that happens. So it turns out that Nex is the one responsible.
Right.
Kind of.
Right.
It was his doing, but he didn't physically kill the Naga. So that was true. He did not lie.
Right.
Because he did not physically kill her. But he bit... I don't know what those monsters were. Were they troll? I don't know. Something bears. What did he call them?
Oh, they were like... It was two animal names together.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm trying to find it. Go ahead.
I'll find it. But so apparently he had bitten all of these whatever bears. And as a result was able to like mind control them to kill the Naga.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, were they conscious of the murder? Like, because they didn't explain how that works.
To me, it just felt like they were, like, mind-controlled.
Yeah, like, just like zombies, right? Like, they don't know anything.
Yeah, like sleepwalking style.
Okay, yeah. But the thing was, like, he bit the whole tribe.
Uh-huh.
Now, why are there so many of these on the Ark? Is my first question. Because it looks like most of the other ones, there were only like two.
Bears.
But these bear things. There's,
bears.
What is it?
Bug bears.
Bug bears. There you go. I mean, it looks like there's at least like four of
three?
Them. Three of them.
But there's three vampires too.
Yeah,
to the left of
there's three
panel.
Vampires too, yep. And the, by the bugbear looks like a red beast.
Yes, I was going to say that. Yeah.
which I liked. That was cool. But I mean, most of them looks like there's only maybe a couple of each. So I don't know why they would have more. And they all look to be males too. So that's also kind of odd. But like he bit all of them when they were sleeping, and none of them noticed that they got bitten by a vampire while they were sleeping. That seems kind of odd to me too, man. And I'm not saying that like in terms of odd and that's the writer's choice, but odd that they wouldn't notice.
I don't know. I didn't really pay no mind to it because like with the interview with the vampire type thing where he sneaks into her room and bites her and then has his way with her, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, because once you bite and put the thoughts in their head, they're not going to remember anyway, right?
Sure.
So,
I guess you're right. Well, it's like when a mosquito bites you, right? Like, you usually don't know when they bite you. You just feel it afterwards.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense then. All right. That's fine. I forgive it then.
Yeah.
But there's all these vampires. Where are all these vampires coming from, dude? There's like hundreds of them.
Yeah, there's hundreds, yeah. Under this, they're like vampire swamp creature type things, right?
Yeah. They look like, well, I don't know if you've ever seen Nosferatu. What was the one when they remade it? It had John Malkovich. Not Interview with a Vampire.
No.
But, dude, that movie was awesome because it was a movie about the filming of Nosferatu.
Yes.
But then the actor that was playing Nosferatu gets killed by a real-life vampire, and so the real-life vampire plays Nosferatu in the movie. It's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I wish I remember the name of that. But anyway, so, yeah, there's this all-out attack. Monsters are getting bitten. The unicorns. By the way, the unicorns do look a little evil in this one because they got the red eyes.
But I think this whole book, all the monsters do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I'm still not convinced of that. And I think we talked about that when the second issue came out, where it seems like most of these monsters are, I don't know, man. Like, they don't really have any power. It's just like a scare tactics thing.
Right, yeah.
And maybe that's why Shrey's in charge. And I really wish we would get more backstory on Shrey. Because they keep talking about him being a sorcerer, and he keeps talking about, you know, not being like the man he used to be.
Right.
But I want to know what that is, right? Because it seems like all these creatures are powerless on this arc, including Shrey.
Right.
So is that like a thing? Like, and it has me wondering, did he actually make a deal with the devil?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe it was God that put him here.
Yeah.
And I think next talks a little bit about that when the vampires attack, because he had this whole plan, knowing that the death of the Naga would not only cause this vampire invasion, because he planned that, but like nobody would trust each other.
Right.
And so the whole thing would fall apart.
Yeah. And it'd be total anarchy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, well, maybe God put us vampires here to end all of you monsters. And he's like, why else would it be dark during the flood? Because now all the vampires can come out.
Right.
And that was pretty interesting. And, you know, we keep hearing about Shrey being this super powerful sorcerer, but he hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't do anything last issue. All he does is talk to monsters and be like, hey, tell me what's up.
Yeah.
And they're kind of scared because he used to be this powerful sorcerer, but, I mean, he's obviously not now. So, I don't know, man. Like, the whole thing feels really weird.
Yeah.
There's got to be a whole lot more we're not being told.
Yeah, there's, well, yeah, which is fine.
Sure.
Also.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm with you on that. It's like, he hasn't displayed anything but like calm and, you know, he only gets pissed when, at the end, right? When he reveals that Nex had something to do with it.
Yeah, right.
And that's the only time he actually like raises his voice or anything.
Yep.
Even like his interrogation methods are calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah, and Nex has one of my favorite lines about here, and I think that kind of iterates the whole thing that we've been discussing. At the end, right before he bites Shrey in the neck, he says, "You're just a man, that's all you are, a man who once played at being a monster, but a man nonetheless." And again, like, I don't believe any of this crap, man. Like, yeah. If he was such a badass, why is he not a badass now?
Right, right. Yeah, I totally. And that picture of Nex right there, where he's saying that,
ooh,
that
is awesome.
Badass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Nex is, like, in some panels, he's, like, a vampire Joker style mixed with Morbius from Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And your John Malkovich movie is called Shadow of a Vampire, by the way.
That's the one. God, it's so good. I might need to watch that. yeah, and that's the end of it. So
yeah, that's, and it's crazy, right? Because he's like supposedly our main character, and he's assumingly getting bit by a vampire and dying,
right?
Because he slit his throat with his fingernail.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff right there at the end.
Crazy stuff indeed. How many issues is this? Is it 4 or is it 6? Let's find out.
I thought it was 6.
It is 6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to look at February solicits and see if it's on there.
I think it was. I think I saw it. No?
Nope.
Just January?
January. So maybe it is just 4. Unless, maybe they're doing like the other books. Where they do the
like
4
seasons?
Yeah, do the 4, take a break, and come back.
Do the 4, put it in a trade.
Yeah, yeah.
In the off month.
Yep.
Do the trade, and then come back.
Yep, something like that.
Yep, that's cool. I like that concept.
All right, you want to give me a rating on this one?
Dude, I'm going to give this one a 4.5.
Really?
Honestly. Yeah, because I'm totally loving this book. I'm loving Juan's art on it, Colin's writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole mystery, everything's not laid out in front of us type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm enjoying the heck out of it. And it's not like the other ones where, like Alters, for example, like, it took a month for it to, you know, for the new one to come out. And then when I read it, I was like, oh, man, I remember how much I love this book. Like, this one, I'm waiting for it to come out.
Mm.
So, and then with the crazy ending, oh, yeah.
It looks like next one's going to be crazier. Did you read the solicit for it?
I did not.
Alright, here, I'm going to read this little paragraph. Shrey's arc is in turmoil. What more would you expect upon a Vesel populated by the worst monsters of all creation? Now, however, the arc has attracted the attention of powerful forces. Vengeful, angelic forces serving the will of the Lord. So I guess now we're going to have angels versus monsters all out fight.
Well, okay. If you scroll past that page and you see the cover for number 4.
Yep.
So is that, I mean, those are like devil wings, but it has angelic colors on them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But, I mean, that's just Krull, right? Krull's got wings.
Yeah, he has wings, but maybe he's the angelic double agent,
Could be.
Because he's the one that's protecting the humans.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know, crazy theory.
Crazy theory time. man. Yeah, I think I'll go... I'm going to go with a 4 as well. This book has gotten really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I agree. Juan's art is... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, so next week, we have 3 books coming out, Ronnie.
Yeah.
Is that right? Or is it it is 3. So we've got Animosity number 11... We've got Brilliant Trash number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed. I figured out what's happening.
Right.
And the brand new series, Monstro Mechanica, is coming out next week as well.
Awesome.
So I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. And then later this month also, we'll have another new book come out too, which is Backaways.
That's right.
With Justin Jordan.
That'll be the week after on the 20th.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that one too.
Yeah. That looks crazy.
I'm glad Aftershock's doing well, man. They've got some freaking awesome books coming out.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome books.
It's all about quality and not quantity, right?
That's right.
Only here, it's like we're getting announcement after announcement, like at least once a week.
Sure.
About something exciting.
Sure.
Keep them churning.
That's right. All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for us, Ronnie.
Sounds good to me, buddy.
Thanks for listening to Two Guys Talk Aftershock. Damn, we should have named it that. It's a good thing we didn't name it Three Guys Talk Aftershock and then Jack disappears.
Yeah.
That's
but we will have a third one, as you said, maybe.
Maybe. I was talking to him yesterday. I'll tell
you. So then we can be like We could be like three-man band or something.
If you want to get in touch with us, Twitter's the best place for me. I don't know about for Ronnie, but he is at Rombar316. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. The Aftershock Comic Fan Group is still going on Facebook.
Yep.
We're not giving an email address because we never check it, and nobody uses email, so it doesn't matter. But Twitter will be the best place, or again, head over to that Facebook group. And Ronnie will let you in.
Yep, I will.
Most likely.
Me or Aaron.
Yeah, somebody
Aaron's
will.
There with me. So
I guess that's going to be it for us. And we'll be back next week, hopefully, if all goes well. Have a good night.